Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
Somewhere in the universe, on the edge of a spiraling galaxy orbiting a flaming ball of gas, is a tiny world that came into being 4.6 billion years ago.
On this world formed seas and land and life, and eventually the island of Borneo. There, in the mangroves, evolved a group of hideous monkeys.
The local people call it Orang Belanda, which means Dutchman, because they say its face reminds them of a sunburnt European.
Proboscis or proboscis monkeys, beer-bellied, beady-eyed, and they have Squidward noses.
Nobody but me.
Wide, flappy, shaped like a pear. When people think of the proboscis monkey, they think of this nose.
In 2013, a BBC poll ranked the proboscis, a word referring to its nose, one of the five ugliest animals in the world, just after blobfish.
Just behind blobfish. You know, what a lot in life to have.
But Ben and I have taken a liking to the monkeys ever since we learned about them.
And almost everything we have learned about the proboscis monkey, we learned from memes. Like the fact that male and female proboscis monkeys actually have different noses. Mm. Noses that look surprisingly like Disney characters.
So this person, they wrote up here, they said, "Have you ever thought about how the sexual dimorphism of modern Disney characters has perfectly paralleled the sexual dimorphism of the proboscis monkey?" And like, so you'll see like a male character and he's got this like big, long nose.
Nose, okay.
And then there's Elsa.
Her tiny little button nose, yeah.
Yeah.
We found this meme and many, many more on a popular Facebook group with a specific approach to nature.
My name's Rhett Barker. I live in Panama City, Florida, and I started Wild Green Memes.
Wild Green Memes for ecological fiends. It is one of the nerdiest places I have visited on the internet.
And that's saying something, folks.
Co-founded by biologist Rhett Barker in 2017, the Facebook group has about 770,000 members, almost 200,000 more on Instagram and TikTok.
Many of the members, like Rhett, are scientists. Many more are just, as they might say, ecological fiends. If you could sum up the vibe of Wild Green Memes in a few words, it might be something like...
relentlessly optimistic. Yeah, relentlessly positive works too.
As the name implies, this is a place for wildlife enthusiasts of a particular ilk. The kinds of folks who spend as much time outdoors as they do online.
And it's a place for memes about all kinds of animals and plants and fungi and bacteria. You've probably seen memes that went viral from here. Some are funny to just about anyone. Others?
We talk about extremely esoteric ecological concepts a lot of the time, but the topics range from that to "I saw a frog today."
For instance, one meme shows an image of Gandalf, hand outstretched, casting a spell on somebody. The text reads, "Brazilian wandering spider," as in Gandalf is the spider.
Below that is an image of a possessed King Theoden, the target of Gandalf's spell. The text over Theoden reads, "Proboscis monkey." Theoden is the monkey, and he tauntingly says to the spider, "You have no power here." Get it?
Oh, geez. Congrats if you did, because you would first need to know that wandering spiders apparently cause erections in male victims.
And you'd also need to know that male proboscis monkeys already have perpetual erections.
I didn't even know that was an actual thing.
Sounds painful. Does not sound comfortable.
You said it was nerdy. That's absolutely nerdy.
To picture wild green memes, imagine logging on to the morass of irrelevant posts and political rants that is Facebook, and then imagine navigating to this thriving community of nature fans where hundreds of thousands of people are interacting through an endless feed of sometimes indecipherable memes starring odd-looking organisms, each with scores of comments that themselves digress into multi-leveled inside jokes. It's fun.
There is a meme about a cat-like animal from Madagascar, the Cryptoprocta ferox.
A scientific name that, as we learned, means ferocious hidden anus.
And then there's a pride meme about the way male gourami fish fight.
They kiss. It's adorable.
There are inside jokes that even insiders don't get.
I'll be gone and I'll come back and be like, why are people posting pictures of scallops and writing, but can they why on it? That makes no sense at all.
On the less esoteric side, you may be familiar with the meme, there are many benefits to being a marine biologist. Have you seen that one? The image macro initially featured a bunch of sea turtles with those words superimposed.
This meme started on Tumblr, and then it exploded on Wild Green Memes.
People added the words to images of friends relaxing in a tent underwater, or Sally Hawkins kissing the fish man in that movie The Shape of Water. There are many benefits to being a marine biologist.
We wind up getting, you know, the rest of life kind of filtered through a wildlife association.
Wild Green Memes even has several spin-off groups, almost like green memes have become a genre of the internet. Rhett Barker says he never expected it to become so popular. Still, he gets it.
Because the reality of nature right now is anything but relentlessly optimistic.
We're living in an epoch many scientists describe as the sixth extinction.
Today's children will likely see thousands of animals disappear in their lifetime.
A quarter of all mammals are considered endangered, for example. About 40% of all amphibians are considered endangered.
Farming and fishing and mining, as well as the use of fossil fuels.
Or, as one scientist put it, this time we're the asteroid.
So, Rhett says, people need memes. Nature needs memes.
Media and discussion about this topic has been largely negative, very doom and gloom. But I think that there's also room to just be excited about nature and to be positive.
And maybe Rhett's right, because Wild Green Memes is doing its part to save the world, one meme at a time.
I'm Dean Green Meme Russell.
I'm Ben Ecological Fiend Johnson, and you're listening to Endless Thread.
We're coming to you from WBUR, Boston's NPR Monkey Reserve.
Lot of proboscis hanging about. Today's episode, the psychology of conservation online and how people are using hope and fear and humor to repair the natural world.
Can memes save the planet? Seriously, we wanted to know. Today, Rhett Barker has a few jobs. One as moderator of Wild Green Memes, another as a biologist for Florida Fish and Wildlife, and another?
About 1 month a year, I go and do film gigs.
And when he says film gigs, he doesn't mean like, you know, making a commercial for the local bistro. Rhett is talking about like James Cameron style, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea epic nature docs. Rhett has gone to the middle of the Pacific Ocean to operate robo cameras in the deep unknown.
There's some stuff that was just like impossible to describe down there. For example, there's a thing that genuinely looks like someone cut the head off of a rubber chicken and it's swimming around in the ocean. But then it also turns upside down and little arms come out and it walks along the bottom.
It's called a headless chicken monster. And yes, there's a meme for that.
Rhett grew up in Florida. He's always been a nature buff. The way he sees the environment, though, has shifted over the years.
I started out to a large extent being upset, like as a kid even, about the problems that exist.
If you were a kid in America in the 1980s and 90s, you probably remember hearing through parents or teachers about acid rain, the Exxon Valdez, the ozone hole, condors and eagles.
The public image of nature was of fragility, death. It weighed on Rhett. So he found himself gravitating to a particular brand of wildlife.
Have a look at the size of that head. 3,000 pounds per square inch. One mistake and I'm just a big patch of ooze.
Steve Irwin and Jeff Corwin, I feel like their nature programs in particular had a positive slant.
I don't care how much of an unnatural fear of snake is coiled up in your body. You can't help but to look at this creature and see a beautiful animal.
When Rhett got to college, the University of Florida, he majored in wildlife ecology and conservation. As the next Steve Irwin, maybe, he learned how to handle gators and execute prescribed burns. He bonded with his peers. Then they graduated.
And as kind of my friend group from undergrad started to disperse across the country, we wanted to have a way to continue to see each other regularly, which is better when you have something to do rather than just being in a group chat.
It was 2017. Meme groups were kind of a thing back then, so that's what they did. First with Florida-specific memes and jokes about certain professors. The group was public, though, and students at other universities got wind of Wild Green memes for ecological fiends.
Suddenly, a group of a few turned into one of a few thousand. And it didn't stop there. Things really blew up because
there was an internet-wide meme trend to make moth memes. Someone took a picture of a moth. The moth looked particularly expressive to humans for some reason. And as a result, people started making memes about it.
This was happening mostly on Reddit. Pictures of moths combined with the words, "I like lamp," things like that. The moth memes made it to Wild Green, and people followed.
What came next is a good window into the culture of the group. To capitalize on the internet-wide moth trend, Rhett and the other moderators started rejecting any posts that weren't moth-related.
Eventually, people started asking, why are there just moth memes in this group?
Then Rhett made a post implying that he had been ousted by a moth. He replaced the group photo with a lamp.
People kind of lost their minds at that.
Pretty soon, there were too many moth memes. So, as a joke, the mods started allowing memes about bats and other predators to, you know, control the moth population.
And as a result of it, the group grew to around 10,000 in a few weeks.
Wild Green memes had started as pure silly fun. And then Rhett says, as it grew and grew and grew, it turned into a community using memes to learn about nature and connect with it in a deeper way.
Which does sound nice, but also maybe a little starry-eyed. I mean, they are just memes. So seriously, what can memes do?
Oh, come on, come on. They're the good stuff, man.
The field of conservation psychology came out of the green movement of the 1950s and solidified a few decades later, in the 90s, when Chicago's Brookfield Zoo hired a psychologist.
At the time, this was a weird idea. The zoo wanted Dr. Carol Saunders to evaluate its educational program. Saunders had bigger questions in mind about the role of zoos and how they influence people. In other words, what makes us care about creatures?
It may sound obvious, but nature has been through hell since the dawn of us. We've hunted mammoths to extinction, clear-cut forests to build farms and cities, poisoned water, polluted the air. The UN estimates 1 million species, not individual animals, but species, are at risk of extinction.
Humans broke it, so we must fix it. Conservation psychology asks, scientifically, how do we get ourselves to fix it, to save nature?
The role of emotions can really help or hurt the movement.
Rupu Gupta is a conservation psychologist with the Hudson River Foundation, an environmental nonprofit in New York City.
We asked her to check out Wild Green Memes for us. What did she think?
I just want to know if we can save the planet with memes.
Right.
She wasn't wowed.
I thought for sure I'd get a chuckle out of you when I asked you if we could save the planet with memes.
I mean, I guess that answers your question to some extent, right? My non-answer.
Rupu was a little hard to pin down. You know, she's an academic.
It's obviously a little bit more complicated, you know, like, than a yes or no answer. So I'm going to again.
I was going to hope for a yes or no, Rupu.
Yeah, right. I mean.
Then again, maybe we were too direct. Maybe we were a little too, I don't know, meme-y. So we backtracked a bit. What is the best way to reach people? Is it hope? Is it fun? Is it fear?
Fear messages have typically not been really helpful.
Personally, I am a fan of the fear method.
Yeah, Dean Death and Destruction Russell, I think, is usually what we call you.
True. But I know that if I were to tell you that on average dozens of species go extinct a day or that half of the coral reefs are gone, you might tune out.
Oh, sorry. Say that one more time.
Maybe you won't tune out, but you'll feel bad because you are just one person. So what are you supposed to do about it?
Everything is so urgent and catastrophic. So there's a sense of fatigue. There's a sense of helplessness from being able to tackle these issues at such a grand scale. One person or one individual or even groups by themselves can't deal with. So that's the...
Rupu says hope, on the other hand, is much more motivating.
But then let's get to memes, as you were asking, which brings in another layer of complexity in talking about humor, right?
Research in conservation psychology suggests that humor presents a new way of thinking about an issue, often a hopeful way that
takes you away to a different state of mind where you think, okay, like I'm feeling better at this moment compared to the moment before I had seen the meme, right?
If humor downplays the overall issue, it doesn't accomplish anything beyond those good feelings. It needs to be somewhat directed. You need to pair it with a thing to care about and a thing to do.
For instance, memes that center around the animals in its presentation can foster online actions like donating money to a campaign, that kind of thing.
And that is exactly what Wild Green Memes and others are trying to do. How? We'll get to that in a meme it.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's hard to be someone who does funny animal drawings and not run into Wild Green Memes.
Rosemary Mosco is a science cartoonist. Yes, a science cartoonist. She draws what she calls unloved creatures.
Anything that's slimy. I love salamanders and frogs.
Also pigeons and vultures.
Which are massively important to the environment, but also, you know, poop on their own feet to stay cool.
That makes the proboscis monkeys problem seem tame.
Rosemary's first reaction when she saw Wild Green Memes.
It's the youth. The youth are making their memes.
And honestly, that was my reaction too, gotta admit.
Not me, I was like, I just turned my ball cap around backwards and I said, hello, fellow kids.
Oh man, doesn't surprise me.
Rosemary's never considered herself a professional meme maker until...
I had friends who would send me screenshots every time they would post one of my cartoons and say, oh, you've made it. You're on Wild Green Memes.
She sees herself as a kindred spirit in the green meme world. Humor can be a valuable tool, she says, That's something she learned firsthand when she was just starting out.
I felt like if I wasn't serious, people would not, you know, not pay attention and not think that I had credibility. And then I had this really funny moment where I made a chart, sort of a cartoonish chart, that aimed to help people figure out what to do when they found a baby bird outside of the nest.
Often people will have no idea what to do when they see a baby bird that's dropped out of the nest. Do you touch it? Do you call someone? So Rosemary made two versions of the same cartoon to help educate people. Kind of like a choose your own flowchart, starting with, is it visibly injured?
If yes, contact a licensed wildlife rehabilitator.
If no, ask yourself, what does it look like?
The serious version presented three options. Option one, eyes closed.
Put it back in the nest.
Option two, eyes open and only mostly naked.
Same deal. Parents won't reject chicks just because you touched them.
Option three, feathered but an awkward flapper.
Eh, leave it alone. It's fine. It's just figuring it out.
The funny version added a fourth option. So what does it look like?
It was like a Jurassic Park joke. You know, if your baby bird has a sickle claw on its toe, you know, and like attacks you, then here's what you should do.
Rosemary worried the joke would muddle the overall message, but she posted both versions anyway, kind of A-B serious funny testing, if you will. And
the funny version was the one that everybody downloaded, and people would reach out to me every spring and say, I saved a baby bird, or, you know, I left a baby bird alone that didn't need help, and it's because of your chart with the dinosaur on it.
Humor can make facts stickier. I experienced this with the proboscis monkey, and I will never forget some of those facts. Rosemary says humor's also more likely to prompt conversation about subjects often deemed too sad or politicized for everyday chit-chat. It's a social lubricant.
We don't necessarily all have the sense that we're really concerned because people aren't talking about it, which is why I think it's important for us to make memes and cartoons and talk about it. Is, you know, many, many climate scientists and communicators just tell us, just please start talking about it. Bring it into the national consciousness so that we can start pushing harder.
But talking about something, learning about it, that alone won't save the world. So what about money?
In 2018, Ashton Biological Preserve fell on hard times. The private nonprofit in North Florida is home to endangered radiated tortoises and vulnerable gopher frogs. It operates on an annual budget of $30,000, all donations. That year, they were barely getting by.
When Wild Green Memes co-founder Rhett Barker heard,
it got me thinking, well, we have this group that's grown to around 10,000 people. Most of them are nature enthusiasts. Maybe we could do a fundraiser and help this nonprofit.
This is a group that excels at weird. They wanted to do something more creative than a Kickstarter. They settled on a charity battle.
I don't even want to say infighting, but there's like competition between like birders and marine biologists or like geologists and people who study living things.
This is Curtis Sarkin, another Wild Green mod and meme maker who also teaches science at summer camps and after school programs. Curtis says the idea was to pit people against each other based on their interests.
Like you could be in Trash Mob because you love gulls and raccoons, or Leafy Boys because you like leaves.
That'd be me. I'd be in Leafy Boys, I'm pretty sure.
And that's how you join the gang, by just saying I want to be in Leafy Boys. And now you're in it.
The idea was that you would donate to the biological preserve in the name of your chosen group. The group that raised the most got bragging rights. Rhett would do regular live stream updates.
The front runner is Herpetology Gang. Although if anyone passes Herpetology Gang, I will eat one of these gross cookies that's made out of olive oil and salt instead of sugar and butter.
The first time I visited Wild Green Memes was in the middle of a charity battle, and I honestly had no idea what was happening. People were posting insults that made no sense and also were about frogs and cranberries, or like the Toucan War, which honestly maybe had nothing to do with the battles.
Again, that's just kind of the vibe of this Facebook group, which Curtis describes as
this sort of like playful gatekeeping of like, oh, you weren't here for the Toucan War. Of course you don't know what's happening.
Anyway, the first charity battle raised nearly $2,000, enough to keep the lights on at Ashton Biological Preserve. Herpetology Gang won.
We spoke with the manager of the preserve. It's hard to overstate his gratitude. This is a place that takes care of animals and has helped preserve some 1,600 acres of land. Manager aside, there is no paid staff because, frankly, they can't afford it.
In the years since that charity battle, it's become an annual event. In total, Wild Green Memes has raised almost $60,000 for Ashton Biological Preserve, money that was used to install solar panels, among other things. To the preserve, Wild Green Memes was practically a godsend.
The charity battle has been extended. The money goes to a variety of projects, including Amazon rainforest restoration, funding pollination gardens, saving elfin butterflies, on and on. This may shock you. There is very little scientific research looking into the effectiveness of internet memes for conservation.
By very little, we mean one paper. We found one scientific study that assessed the power of memes. Published in 2020, it was led by Magdalena Lenda, a conservation researcher with the Polish Academy of Sciences.
Lenda got the idea to study memes during a postdoc fellowship in Australia. She was homesick, scrolling Facebook, and came across a funny animal meme, written in Polish, featuring...
No one is quite sure why the male's nose grows so big. And indeed, it sometimes seems almost to get in the way.
The proboscis monkey is back, baby! Woo!
One of the main problems in attracting donations for animals is that humans are pretty judgy. Research shows that we give more to campaigns showcasing large animals with forward-facing, big eyes. Furriness helps, cute noses too. That's why the mascot for the World Wildlife Fund, one of the biggest nature NGOs, is a panda.
We are so shallow. A separate study at the Paris Zoological Park asked people to donate to specific animals. Aramis, the jaguar, raked in 89,000 euros. Zyko, the Amazonian codfish, got 1,900 euros. Other studies have shown that donations have little to do with whether an animal is endangered.
In the U.S., physical traits are better predictors of government conservation spending than extinction risk.
Perfect.
Which is a bummer for the proboscis monkey.
The proboscis does not attract a lot of money, especially in Poland, where most people haven't heard of the big-nosed, small-eyed monkey from Borneo. But funny memes changed that.
The meme study found that before 2016, when proboscis memes took off in Poland, there were 5 news articles about the monkeys. After the memes, media coverage jumped 6-fold. Google searches spiked, the memes got as many likes as NGO posts with cute polar bears or, you know, whatever.
6 Polish fundraising campaigns grew from the memes. They raised $610, not much. But $610 goes a long way in Borneo. And these campaigns were loose, unprofessional efforts. The researchers concluded that if someone were to use memes in a more directed way, they could pull in a significant amount of money.
Case in point, after 6 years of Wild Green Memes charity battles, how much money do you think you've raised by now in total?
It's a little over $500,000 as of this year. Yeah.
Wow. All for memes?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
554,000 to be exact. Rhett says he never imagined this messy nook of the internet, a ragtag group of online ecology fiends. He never imagined they'd raise that much money in 6 years. He started a nonprofit called Wild Green Future to keep it going.
Here is one thing we didn't learn from Wild Green Memes about the proboscis monkey. It's endangered. People have fragmented the forests with palm oil and rubber plantations. Populations have declined 70% in the last three decades, and between 7,000 and 17,000 monkeys are believed to be left in the wild.
I mean, are you shocked that that's not on Wild Green Memes, a place that, as Red has said, is relentlessly optimistic?
Relentlessly positive works, too.
I guess that's the thing that always stuck out to me. Here's a bunch of nature nerds online, and if you were to scroll through their feed, you might miss that we are living through one of the six largest extinction events since the Earth came into being 4.6 billion years ago. You may overlook that our climate is falling apart, and to me, that feels a little strange.
I don't think there's a way to be sunny and positive that's not perpetuating denial.
Uh-oh. Dean found a friend.
Yeah, Margaret Klein-Solomon feels similar to me. She's a clinical psychologist turned climate activist, and she heads up the Climate Emergency Fund, which raises money for nonviolent protests, things like that. She's not as anti-meme as she sounds.
There is room for positive emotions and memes, but telling the truth is just critically important.
Knowledge and donations from non-billionaires can only go so far. Margaret says it is actions that matter. And?
The core blockers to action are psychological and cultural.
Rupu Gupta, our other psychologist, told us fear prevents action. Margaret says that's
totally wrong. Fear is probably the most reliable motivator. It's the evolved mechanism through which we respond to threats.
Fear that you'll be eaten or that your house is burning, that typically triggers a fight or flight response.
To Margaret, we are in a burning house, but don't smell the smoke.
We're drinking our coffee saying, this is fine.
There's this phenomenon called pluralistic ignorance, which means that humans evaluate risks socially, not rationally.
If the plane starts to shake, but the captain sounds chipper, that usually means you're going to be fine.
But, Ben, what if the captain is just trying to manage your emotions?
Why you got to be that way, Dean? Margaret told us we can't say that being blunt about our environmental crises doesn't work, because we have never been blunt. For years, the reality of climate change and biodiversity loss has been shrouded in false debate.
Until we enter emergency mode, which is fundamentally different from what we're in now, normal mode. Until we make that switch, I really don't have any hope.
When Greta Thunberg was 16 years old, she gave a speech to world leaders. She said adults were always trying to give young people hope.
But I don't want your hope. I don't want you to be hopeful. I want you to panic. I want you to feel the fear I feel every day. And then I want you to act.
What does it mean to act? Margaret told us that while she supported the philanthropic work of Wild Green Memes.
Yeah, I guess I would say I would love to see this group supporting the climate movement, like posting about places that people can join or get trained or support in addition to their lighthearted vibes.
She also felt silly for using the word vibes, which, come on.
I use it all the time, seriously, all the time. The research about messaging is mixed. Some studies favor fear, some hope. Both camps tend to agree that whatever the message, it needs to give people a specific way to get involved.
This is a problem that individuals cannot solve on their own. But the good news is there's a rising grassroots movement and that you have a critical role to play in that movement.
One reason Margaret might value joining a movement over donations to pollinator projects and saving the elfin butterflies, both things that she thinks are great, is the 3.5% rule. Historically, if 3.5% of a country's population participates in mass protests, those protests have led to major change.
When it comes to saving nature, individual donations are great, but small. Lasting change comes from doing something together.
I'm not sure I totally agree with Margaret's gentle critique of wild green memes. Maybe I'm not thinking strategically, maybe small preserves and pollinator projects are just band-aids compared to hardcore in the streets protests. Maybe I'm deluding myself, still thinking that we can do both. Because we do need to do both.
It's worth restating, too, that many of the members of Wild Green Memes are scientists who work on conservation every day. And after talking with Rhett, we heard through an acquaintance that he used to hold political bonfires where attendees would talk about animal rights. He and other Wild Green members are not ignoring reality. Far from it.
In context of the sixth extinction and climate change, those things would not be happening without humans. I think that's obviously true. But at the same time, the truest and most natural stewards of any landscape and the people that are going to fix this problem are the people who live there.
To me, Wild Green Memes seems more like a safe space, a place to celebrate the good without the bad.
It's a way of coming together with other people who, for some reason, get really excited about the fact that scallops have 200 eyes. That is exciting. And that is a beautiful thing. Or, as co-mod Curtis Sarkin says,
honestly, just being in this group has increased hope.
There is still something that doesn't sit right with me. And it's more to do with me, I think, than memes. This relentlessly optimistic outlook. In a safe space, I think that is wonderful, necessary even. But at some point in the day, all of us have to step back outside into the unsafe world. And on the outside, I don't think we as a species worry enough. Conservation is fundamentally an act of saving nature from ourselves. It is not something given so much as owed, and yet the work is fragmented, underfunded, and left up to a few dedicated souls, such as Rhett. It's not enough. Species are going extinct. Ecosystems are going extinct. Our planet is changing for the worse. No meme can fix that.
But people can. And I think that just like any great meme, there are some key ingredients for people to actually do something. A meme starts with an image, right? And it often adds some humor, and context is a piece of it too. And for us all to survive and thrive with our changing planet, we need some key ingredients too. We need the context, the larger context, and then we need to take a specific image from that context, and we need to take action. And if we're inclined to be too overwhelmed by the bad news and just give up, we won't take action. So I think we need the humor. We need the memes. We need anything and everything that is going to allow us to not give up, to do something and then inspire our fellow humans to do something. And if that starts with memes, call me a green meme lord in training.
And I'll be an ecological fiend, I guess.
And also, you know, we'll do the other stuff to save the planet. Too.
Endless Thread is a production of WBUR in Boston. This episode was written and co-hosted by me, Dean Russell.
Also me, Ben Brock Johnson. Mix and sound design by Matt Reed.
The rest of our team is Emily Jankowski, Samita Joshi, Grace Tatter, Paul Vikas, and Amory Sievertson.
Endless Thread is a show about the blurred lines between online communities and the next big wellness trend, Brazilian wandering spiders.
If you have an unsolved mystery or untold history that you want us to tell, hit us up, endlessthread@wbur.org. Happy Earth Day, everyone. And by that I mean happy day, because every day is Earth Day, isn't it?